Welcome everyone to the November edition of Silver Screen Cinema Classics and our last dive into classic film for this year. I am your host, Michael Wilson. This month we're diving deep into the heart of the 60s counterculture with Milos Forman's psychedelic rock musical, Hair. Joining me are three fantastic guests from our own Discord crew. First up, welcome back, Toby. Welcome, buddy.
Hi.
How are you doing?
That movie was something.
It was a movie we saw.
Indeed it was.
And fun fact, our other guest is the one who picked this groovy trip for us to review. So also please welcome Adrienne.
Welcome. Hello from Los Angeles, everyone. Yay.
This is Los Angeles calling. Yes, thank you for picking this one. And finally, a last-minute addition. She just couldn't stay away. She thought she might be missing something. Please welcome back Sandra Evanson. Welcome back, Sandy.
That FOMO is a killer. It was a really fun movie for me.
Oh,
cool. I enjoyed it. Spoiler alert. So, so yeah, but if things do get a little out there tonight, we know exactly who's to blame. Adria.
Oh dear. She's the one that brought the LSD to the party.
Oh my god. Oh, no. Just me walking along and taking LSD out of my hat and putting it in people's mouths in Central Park. Thank you very much.
We've all watched the movie, I'll be honest, most of us for the first time, and we're ready to dive in with some thoughts. But Hair is not just a movie, it's a full-blown cosmic journey back to the days of peace, love, and spontaneous dancing in Central Park. We're talking hippie communes, love-ins, and a whole lot of Let the Sunshine In. Expect us to break down the songs, the choreography, the quote-unquote fashion, and the wild themes of rebellion and self-expression. We'll ask questions like, is it possible to survive a Forman movie without getting a contact high? Clearly not, in the case of Sandy. Is there enough fringe and paisley in the world for George Berger? And of course, we'll tackle that iconic finale with all the weight it deserves. Nice. So kick off your shoes, grab some love beads, and join us for 90 minutes or so of far out fun as we hitch a ride back to an era where dreams were big and Hair was even bigger. But before that, it occurs to me that this is a cinema classics, as I said, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that this is the first cinema classics for at least a couple of you guys. Sandy, I know you were on the 2001 episode, but Adrian and Toby, you'll have to remind me, have you been on a cinema classics episode yet?
No.
I don't know. I've been on almost every one, but I think this might be my first classics with you.
I do think it is when I looked it up, because the reason I'm asking is, as with the cult classics that DK does, when you come on for the first time, I have to ask you the question, what's your favorite classic movie? And the way that I define that is basically any movie from the dawn of cinema to 1979. So yes, Hair literally just squeaked in. It was released in 1980 here in the UK, but it was 1979 officially, so it's allowed. So yeah, I'd like to ask, just, you know, because a lot of people are into classic cinema and don't get a chance to discuss it. So do you have a favorite classic movie? And Adrienne, I'm going to ask you first, because I have a feeling you might have a couple on deck that you may think of.
Oh no, this would have been a question I needed to know that it was coming.
Oh, sorry.
That's not that my brain, but
well, there's always Hair.
That's a really hard one. But what year did Fiddler on the Roof come out?
Oh, that's definitely a cinema classic. It's
I have to say that might be one. That might be in my top 10. We'll just put it there. Okay, that's next.
Definitely. It doesn't have to be your exact number one, just something that you wanted to shout out. And that is one of my mom's favorite classic.
I love your mom. I need to meet this lady.
She loves musicals. Well, not all, but most musicals in general. So awesome. I grew up and she was, I remember buying her when DVDs first came out, copies of Fiddler on the Roof, West Side Story. Really old, like, I don't know if that I would call them musicals, but old, like, religious type films, like Greatest Show on Earth.
Sure.
I suppose it has got a musical element to it. Yeah, all kinds of things. So anyway, Toby, you're on the spot then. I know you're, feel free to name a German film. There's some quality German expressionism from the 20s and 30s. But do you have a cinema classic that you want to sell?
The comments are going to murder me.
We're quite accepting.
I don't have many movies of that time. I watch Star Wars, but that feels like a cop out.
It does also count because it was 1977.
I'm just going to randomly say the 1978 version of Death on the Nile with Angela Lansbury. Oh.
Okay, that's a good call.
And Maggie Smith.
Oh, rest in peace to both of those legends. Right, so back to the matter at hand then. Normally this would be where I would ask you, what is your first experience of hair? When did you first encounter it and what did you think of it? But as I've already said, myself, Sandy and Toby, the answer is, you know, a day or two ago. Wow. So there's not really much to say, but I am still going to ask the question to you, Adrian, because I'm fascinated as to where you first saw it, why you chose this for us to watch, and what kind of impact it had on you the first time you saw it.
Okay, so my mom had the record in her record collection, and I was like an only child growing up till I was 12, so I didn't have kids to play with, so I was always going through everybody's stuff. So she had all these records, you know, like all the original, like Rolling Stones. I can remember seeing all those things, but this was one of them, and I was like, what is this? And so I just started playing the record in my room over and over, and I loved all the songs, and I knew them all. And then I saw... We had this thing called On TV, and the movie came out in, like, I think it was 1980, 81, 82. It had started playing on, like, cable TV, I guess it was, in Los Angeles. And then the VHS came out, and I got it as a gift. So, oh, wow, okay. Yeah, I was just a little kid. I think I got the gift probably, you know, in the early 80s, and I've had it ever since. I've just always been watching it. And I never hear you guys talk about movies like this. It's just way, way, way outside of the whole Star Trek and Marvel world. So
it's not a million miles away from something I would probably have come across, actually, because I enjoy musicals and I don't mind, let's see, like biopics or historical looks back at like moments or current events at the time, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So,
I was kind of more surprised that I had genuinely never heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah, when you said you hadn't heard of it, that, well, we need to do this one if they'll do it. And then I wasn't sure you guys would agree to do it, to be honest.
Oh, we'll do anything you guys suggest.
Well, you know, but it's a little niche.
But it is, but like I said, I knew as soon as I kind of learned a bit about it and was like, if it's a musical, I'll give any musical a go. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think I've encountered a terrible whatever. So.
Yeah. Oh, good. I thought the Milos Forman aspect would, and the Treat Williams stuff and Beverly D'Angelo. Like, I thought maybe that would bring you in.
Yeah, I should have specified that once I found out it was Milos Forman. Man on the Moon is possibly one of my favorite movies of all time. Heartbreaking movie, but so powerful and well made. So obviously One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest as well, if you want to go further back. But yeah, looking at that director's resume, I was like, well, now I've got it.
I thought it would pull you in, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, as a cinephile, if I didn't know Milos Forman's work, yeah, I wasn't impressed, you know.
I'm thrilled to hear Sandy's opinion. But earlier, Toby said that was a movie, so now I don't know what he's going to say. But anyway.
Well, Toby is the youngest of us, to be fair, and probably the most removed from what the heck the
film is. Yeah, I was surprised he was going to do this at all. So I'm like, oh, I love it.
We traded Muddy's Game, so...
I did watch Molly's Game and, you know, enjoyed it. So, hey, you're here for me today. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Oh, we're always there for each other. You know that. So, yeah. You said the first time that you saw the movie then, Adrienne, was probably on TV.
I think it played on this thing called On TV that we had in Los Angeles back in the day. It had, like, Poltergeist and all these weird movies that you could see in the early 80s, and I watched everything. I was just sitting there watching it all, eating spaghetti at night, you know, like, oh, I guess everybody does this. It turned out it was only in certain urban areas, you know, metropolitan areas, I guess is what I mean to say, like Los Angeles.
I see. The reason I ask is, it's going to come up later because I've written down something about it, but do you remember if the version that you saw was the actual complete film? Did it all make sense, and did you feel like there was a lot of stuff cut from it?
Oh, I don't know, but I do know that later on when I watched it, there was stuff that I hadn't remembered as a kid. You know, some of the scenes were longer, especially some of the dancing scenes. And I know that, I can remember a couple of the songs were on the soundtrack that I didn't remember seeing in the movie. But now that I see the movie, they are there.
I do have the reason for that. I will get to it, but I won't do it just yet because it's written in the script for when we get to it. But there is a reason for that, and you probably did see a heavily cut version, which Miloš Forman did not agree with, and that was a huge source of contention. And anyway, so cool. We're all prepared to give our opinions, but before we do that, we always do a little bit, I see a little bit, quite a lot sometimes of behind the scenes about the movie in question. And this time around, all of my cohorts have agreed to help me out with various parts so that you're not just listening to me. And when it comes to the behind the scenes, Adrienne, you've offered to help out with the first half of this.
Sure. You ready?
Would you mind just take it away whenever you're ready? Yeah.
Okay. Hair is a 1979 musical anti-war comedy drama film directed by Miloš Forman and adapted for screen by Michael Weller, based on the 1968 Broadway musical Hair, the American tribal love rock musical. Dance scenes were choreographed by Twyla Tharp and were performed by Tharp's dancers. Hair was nominated for 2 Golden Globes, Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy, and New Star of the Year in a Motion Picture for Treat Williams. As the film's plot and soundtrack differ greatly from the original musical, Jerome Ragni and James Rado, who wrote the stage show with composer Galt McDermott, were unhappy with the film adaptation. They felt it failed to capture the essence of Hair in that hippies were portrayed as oddballs and some sort of aberration, without any connection to the peace movement. Ragni and Rado stated, "Any resemblance between the 1979 film and the original Biltmore version, other than some of the songs, the names of the characters, and common title, eludes us." In their view, the screen version of Hair had not yet been produced. During the closing number, when Berger sings the third verse, background singers are singing lines from William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Eyes look your last, arms take your last embrace, and the lips, oh you doors of breath sealed with a righteous kiss, are both from Romeo's final monologue. It's followed by the rest is silence, the prince's last line in Hamlet.
Thank you for that, Adrienne. That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't even notice that in that last, but it was quite an emotional moment, but I didn't notice a little Shakespeare quotations happening in the background there. I'll carry on. I've got another half of the BTS for you, so you do get to hear me or have to suffer through me. I'll start by saying that over 20,000 extras and background artists participated in the musical numbers 3500 and Let the Sunshine In, which were both staged at the base of the Lincoln Memorial. Approximately 10,000 New York residents appeared in the Central Park sequences as extras and background artists for musical numbers including Colored Spade, Ain't Got No, aka I'm Black, and Aquarius, aka The Age of Aquarius. A young director named George Lucas was offered the chance to direct Hair in the early 1970s, but he turned it down because he was developing American Graffiti. Probably saved us from years of having CGI replacements for all the actors. Years later, Miloš Forman cited his loss of his moral rights to the film to the studio as eventually leading to his 1997 John Huston Award for Artists' Rights from the Film Foundation. He is quoted as saying, "What was behind that award was that one day I had in my contract that when the studio wants to sell Hair to the network, but they have to have, you know, consent or what would they do with it? But I didn't have this. So what they did, they didn't sell it to the network. They sold it to syndicated television where I didn't have that right. What happened? The film played on 115 syndicated stations, practically all over the United States, and it's a musical. Out of 22 musical numbers, 11 musical numbers were cut out from the film, and yet it was still presented as a Miloš Forman film. It was totally incomprehensible, gibberish, and butchered beyond belief." So now you know what I was referring to.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Because I listened to the actual soundtrack recently when I knew this was coming up, and it was very different.
Yeah, fair enough. And Hair is currently available in the UK, at least, to stream for no extra cost on Amazon Prime and Freevee. But be quick, as it does leave those services on November the 28th. You can rent it on Apple TV, Amazon, and Sky Store. It's also available to buy on a DVD Blu-ray combi, with the easiest and cheapest option being a 40th anniversary dual format released by the British Film Institute, or BFI. Which we were talking about off air. I have no idea why, but apparently in the UK you can get a BFI version of it, and it's quite easy to find. It's probably not quite as easy in the US, which baffles me, but there we go. So do you guys have anything you wanted to add from that? Anything surprise you, or anything you felt was a bit shocking?
can't say so.
No, no, it's pretty straightforward. I think I was shocked to learn that Foreman, you know, got the rights taken off him and had the film butchered and still presented as his. I felt bad about that. But yeah, fair enough. Cool. Well, we're going to jump into the main section of the review then, which will break into the usual sections, writing and plot, you know, acting, direction, any sort of production design, etc. You'll see as we go, basically. It's what we always do, but we don't stick rigidly if the conversation flows a different way. So we'll begin by talking about the writing and the plot, because that's the first thing I have in my notes here. And yeah, I'm going to come to you first, Adrian. Do you have any particular thoughts on the writing and the plot that you wanted to share with us as a starting gaff?
Well, I just love the movie. I love how it flows. It has these sections. I love how we are introduced to Claude as this, you know, kind of cowboy guy, and how it ends up. I mean, I just think taking these character arcs is amazing.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it, actually, because they do go through a lot of the characters, and some more than others, but there's definitely arcs there that are notable.
Cool. Everyone does. Yeah, I love that. I can't wait to hear your opinions.
Fair enough. So what about you, Sandy? Is there anything about the writing that stands out you want particularly to mention first?
Just that I was surprised that it pulled me in right away, and how there was a story there when there was so much music. Sometimes you have to like sacrifice one for the other. And I don't know, this, I just think, really blended it all together so well that there was so much story, but also so much music.
Yeah, I slightly disagree. I thought, at least for the first half, I found it really overwhelming that they were shoving in so much musical song and dance numbers in just kind of neglecting, for me, the plot. I wanted to get to know the characters a little bit better before. It just felt like it was like bam, 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 one sort of song to another, to another, to another. And I was like, oh, stop for breath so we can get a group. But thankfully, I think the second half improved on that. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, all of the kind of song and dance numbers were fantastic. I mean, I should have said during the BTS also, when I found out that it was Twyla Tharp who choreographed it, that was another thing where I was like, well, it's going to be incredible. Then. It's going to look amazing at least. Yeah. So, yeah.
It really needs to be watched twice. You know, first it's overwhelming. Yeah. With all the music and the hippiness and the clothes and every, you know, nobody's washed and all that. So people are like, oh, but then it's so good.
I mean, it wasn't so much that. It's just, like I said, I was interested enough in the characters, and I knew a couple of the actors, and I kind of wanted to learn more. And yet there isn't really an introduction for them. Mm-hmm. It's just pretty much they are introduced by their actions during songs or during musical numbers and things, and it's like, okay, that's what you choose to do, fair enough, but I would have rather had a little bit of story in there to kind of, you know, to handhold me, I guess, between songs, but that's probably just me. Cool. So how about you, Toby? What would you say stood out from the... I'm really intrigued here. What stood out about the writing and the plot for you?
I thought it was interesting that some songs had a lot of deep, well, quote unquote deep, stuff like that deep, but a lot of lyrics, and then that are thoughtful, and then there are such as songs that are just listicles. That's interesting that there's such a diversion between the songs.
Mm-hmm. I mean they're very different types of songs, because the sheer amount of them means you can do that. Okay.
Like, at one point, they're just listing drugs in the listicle. I'm like, okay. Thank you for that.
And then, sorry.
And then there are songs that are actually deal with deeper political topics or, like, identity. Yes. And I'm like, there's so much difference between the songs. Mm-hmm. And, that stood out.
I do think it's because... And I don't agree with the kind of original writers of the musical that it butchered it or anything, although it's a very different story. But I do think they tried to shove a lot of the songs and stuff in there, and I think lost a little bit of the meaning of some of them. So when I looked up that song, which is like listing drugs or whatever, like you said, it's supposed to be comparing apparently LSD and LBJ, and him being the president at the time, and kind of like they're both, you know, terrible for you, one's not, one is, etc. And there's meant to be like a socio-political bit of commentary there, but the film was just like, nah, let's just list types of drugs for the next 3 minutes, which was kind of, I felt, was a little bit of a loss. But
I mean they were in between there, but I don't know how it's in the musical, but in the context of the movie it just felt a little odd.
Yeah. Although it does kind of, I think a lot of it's designed to get you to the acid trip sequence, which is kind of, I don't know how we got there, but my word, it's a fantastic, whether you like it or not, it's a fantastic, bizarre, surreal, it's definitely something to experience, as I think Sandy was alluding to.
How we got there was somebody took off their hat and started handing out sugar cubes in the middle of Central Park.
Yeah. There's a few sort of, I'll be honest, a few very dodgy dated things in this that I didn't particularly love. And I really struggled to like basically every one of the hippie kind of commune. I think like Burger to me is very forward, bordering on sexual harassment at times. And he's just a bit of a dick, frankly. He goes around stealing somebody's car and whatnot. So I'm not saying he deserves what happens to him, but I didn't really find him a particularly likable protagonist. And then you've got that guy Lafayette, who calls himself Hood, who I'm just like, dang, that guy just abandoned his fiance and child. Am I meant to be cool with this?
I was like, what you're saying.
Here.
Okay. but in general, I find the pacing of this movie a little bit odd at times. There was one part where we cut to the Central Park sequence where I was just a little confused for a couple minutes if we are like in the next day or if this is like months. Because there's so much
I didn't think that, but I see like what you mean.
Because there's and I think that's probably that is because they are high. So this whole married thing is because they are high. But I was like, married? Like, what was yesterday?
Yeah.
What is the timing?
Yeah, no, that's again, that's just the whole free love type thing. I'll be honest, I had to kind of look up a few things to clarify them. And one of them was that obviously Jeannie being pregnant is supposedly the whole situation there is that the father is either Hood or, and I forget his name, the dude with the long hair that looks a little bit like the guy from Spinal Tap.
Wolf.
There we go. Wolf. Yeah. So she claims she knows who the father is, but it's one of those two. And it's in there and it's in the songs, but it completely it went over my head because this is the first time I watched it. And then when I understood it, I was like, oh, clicks a lot into place. And then again, when I looked up the musical, I think that's kind of what they're alluding to, because there's a whole thing where her and Claude and Jeannie and what's her name, the other Beverly D'Angelo character, they're in kind of a weird polygamous kind of relationship. Well, weird to us, polygamous free love type relationship. So I did think, like, to me, I read that on the film. I was like, this is almost a bit of a love triangle, but it doesn't entirely go anywhere. And I wasn't sure what it was about. And then, like I said, when I read that, I was like, oh, I see. That's because you're coming from this place of them actually being in a throuple, I suppose. Uh-huh. Okay.
And I got something totally different from it, interestingly enough.
Really? Okay, go for it. I want to hear what it was.
I thought when we were talking about the LSD trip, when my picture, right, where my picture comes from. I thought that was more like a symbol of her, like, this is the path she's on, like, to get married, have a child, and like her struggling to fly away from it, to get away from her family that's all, you know, about tradition and they're having like a cotillion or whatever for her, like. Yeah, I that's what I got, and like how she was trying to fly away and she was struggling at first, but then she, you know, took flight.
Yeah, that's what I got from it too, because there was a debutante ball.
I did read about this, and supposedly, again, in so much as you can assign meaning to anything, you can choose what you want to have as a meaning. I'm not saying this is the definitive thing.
Especially in an LSD trip.
Well, exactly, but the filmmakers, the filmmakers at least have said that the trip is entirely supposed to be the perspective of Claude, and it's him literally choosing between his various lifestyles of, like, does he go with the buttoned up sort of get married, have kids, regular, get into high society type life? Does he go with the kind of hippies and live with them and, you know, marry Jeannie or whatever and live their life? Is it something in between? And it is literally the wrestling between those two worlds that he's experiencing, you know, in his mind as an outside kind of physical thing that you can see. And I think when you know that, there's some interesting kind of like links to that and kind of imagery that could mean various different things. But as I said, I'm not here to say, oh, it definitively means this, because
I don't think our two views canceled out the other. I definitely need to see it again, but I just like, and maybe it's just being a female, I just like zeroed in more on her, what she was struggling with. And I even think about his choices he was facing.
His acid trip, you know, it clearly Claude's acid trip. He's watching it live in the park, but the acid is putting in different people because the Hare Krishna dancers are there, but he's seeing, you know, the form of them doing it, but it's the people he knows doing it. It's interesting.
I'm pleased you said that, because that was one of the things I kind of liked the most, because I'll be honest, I didn't really assign any particular meaning to it. I just kind of let it wash over me and experienced it. So like I said, what I'm saying is supposedly the meaning is just something I've read. I didn't really have any thoughts, but I found myself annoyed because I was like, well, this is really weird because we're not relating to anything. And then once it did, and like you said, it was kind of like, no, this is what he's seeing, but it's being put into a different kind of form. And I found that really clever and was like, oh, okay, now I can kind of, I'm way more on board with it, I think, because it has some basis in something, which, again, makes no sense for me to say.
I mean, a lot of people, like, I remember watching this with my sister, and she said, oh, so those sugar cubes have acid in them. This is when she was much older, and I'm like, yes. So that's what's happening.
Oh, I immediately knew that. It was just, like I said, of course. I was like, well, if the acid trip has no semblance to reality or relates to anything, then what's the point? And I didn't see the more metaphorical side of things for whatever reason. So it was only when it literally was like, he's seeing them, so they're there in his vision, if you want to call it that. And I was like, oh, okay, I got you. Now it's starting to take a bit of shape. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's tired too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing, is that this whole thing happens in what, like 3 days?
Yeah.
For the first sort of half of the movie, until he goes off to the army, and it's kind of like, that's a wild 2 or 3 days you had there, buddy.
I remember after that first night he spends with them, and they're sleeping on the steps, and he gets up and he grabs his bag, and I was like, oh man, he managed to hold on to his bag. That's pretty good. That was like the first thought that came to my mind. He still has his bag?
They got it for him. They took care of him. You know, they took care of Claude.
I was more concerned about
in their own way.
I was more concerned how he was able to perfectly choreograph, you know, dance routines and songs, and knew the words to everything, and they all joined in with it. Okay, yeah, cool. His bag was the least of my concerns. But anyway, no, that's just me being daft. So I'll tell you something that I did appreciate as well, and maybe it's just me. I found there to be a kind of, not a huge amount, but just enough level of kind of humor to this, and I guess satirical or dark humor at times, but sometimes just like funny moments that made me chuckle, like when you know, she's hailing the cab almost entirely naked because they've stolen her clothes for a prank, and the cab goes past and then immediately stops and screeches back. And I'm just like, yep, you've got to at least do that joke, I suppose, once in the thing. I mean, there's a couple of moments like that where, like I said, just funny things happened, and I was like, I appreciate that. It shows that the film doesn't take itself super seriously sometimes as well, which I appreciated. And
I thought there was a lot of levity in the film, which made for me the ending not be so bad. It's just kind of like, well, what did you expect?
Oh no, I'm the opposite. I found the ending to be way more of a gut punch because it was all so kind of, I wasn't prepared for that, but from the rest of the film, I was kind of like, oh, okay, it's going to be, you know, we're going to be a bit daft to have a bit of a knock around. And then when it actually happens, I'm like, oh, shit, we actually went there. I mean, I did see it coming, if I'm honest, as soon as it started to happen, I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here. Oh, crap. And then, but like I said, I wasn't really prepared for it off the back of the previous, whatever it had been, hour and 40 minutes of, like, you know, songs and dancing and whatever else. But anyway. I will say I did get annoyed at that before I knew what was going on, although it's kind of stupid to be because it's what give you that powerful ending. But when they kind of, you know, when Berger's going about his stuff, and I'm like, not only have they now just committed the crime of knocking out, you know, a military officer, he's impersonating a sergeant, stole a uniform, marched onto a, you know, military base. I'm like, this dude's immediately going to Guantanamo Bay if this is reality, you know what I mean?
But what's odd is, for all of his not playing by the rules, bucking the system, that when he was in that moment, he just went along and got on the plane.
Well, I think it was more that they wouldn't accept it, and he found that I kind of, this is again perhaps a me problem, but I found him really annoying throughout the film because he was constantly winning arguments with people who I think had the moral high ground, I guess. And I kind of, I found myself relating with the, like, the stuffy people at the dinner that are trying to be like, no, just get out. You annoying, you know what I mean? And even the kind of the MP military police guy, when he's trying to like, no, I just want to go in. I just want to see my friend. And he doesn't quite get like the seriousness of like, no, you're not. This is, you know, you don't just get to decide what to do or whatever. So I was like, it's kind of, I then felt bad. And I think that's kind of the point when he lost the argument of like, no, I'm not him. I'm not supposed to be here, whatever else. And they were just like, yeah, whatever. We don't, none of us want to go, just get on with it. And I was like, oh shit. That was the one time I kind of wanted his arguments to win and it didn't. So then you end up, or I ended up feeling quite bad about that. So yeah, maybe that was just my particular experience.
No, I did feel bad, and it might've even been a bit metaphorical as well. I thought while I was watching it, you know, that they were all kind of swept away at a young age with very little, like, knowing what was going on.
Yeah, and I mean, he does say he's vehemently, like, against the war, at least once, you know, when he's arguing with Claude. So it adds that kind of sad irony, I suppose, for want of a better word, to it, that he has to go there. Again, I was a little bit confused how exactly he had his correct name on his grave, considering they thought he was the other dude. But, you know, we'll maybe not question things that much, I guess.
I'm the master of putting together stories, so I can totally tell you how that happened. But
that's okay, how did it happen?
Oh, well, after he got on the plane, naturally he told everybody what happened. But his friend was there, so he had to fight. But they got the name straightened out afterwards, like right after the plane took off.
Fair enough then. Cool. I'll be honest as well, I had to look up because I didn't realize, and this is maybe me being really stupid or ignorant, but I didn't realize that what he's burning at the start of the movie in the very first scene is his draft card, so he should have been there anyway.
Absolutely.
I didn't actually know what they were, because obviously we've never really had that. And that's whole thing about like, oh, you've got to respond to this or you'll face a hefty fine or so much in jail, and he's just burning it and laughing. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize what that was. And then when I read it was the draft card, I was like, again, now this also makes a lot more sense, and I can see why you opened the movie with that kind of thing as well. So I should know more about history and American culture, clearly.
I forgot about the beginning though.
Did you really?
I only saw it once, so it does merit another run through, especially because there were so many different scenes that I liked so much and want to see again. And surprisingly, you know, there's lots of things that were obviously borrowed from this, and many things that weren't. There was just so many still unique things and unique dance moves and that I've never seen anywhere else. And so, yeah, definitely merits another watch.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think there's a lot of stuff that you just don't have time, because the songs are so fast paced, and there's certain lyrics and things that you can't possibly register, I think, the first time you're watching it, or at least I couldn't. But there were certain things that I could. And again, relating back to that idea about like the levity and the humor, the actual main sort of title song, as it were, Hair, I really appreciated how kind of cheeky that was, and that it was like, you know, oh, well, I've got care, I can do so much with it. Is it, you know, can you see? No, then it's not long enough, kind of thing. It's in the lyrics there somewhere.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. As a kind of weird, you know, subtle protest song, more or less, I think it kind of works. So, yeah. I am curious what you guys think about the whole Hood thing and his. Because that was the one thing that I just couldn't really reconcile by the end of the movie. And I was like, he's just a jerk. And I just feel like, why is that scene kind of there? We don't address it. We don't do anything with it. And it's just kind of like, I do hope we're not supposed to feel sympathy for him, because he's like, well, you just don't get me, man. So I just abandoned you and my child. And I'm like, well, that's still really jerkish. You know what I mean?
Did think it was bothersome. It did bother me seeing that, because it seemed so cruel. And
yeah,
but in the end, she went along for the ride, so everything was okay.
Well, I think she probably felt she had to, but anyway,
she didn't have to. But it was also a moment where, you know, the two ladies are talking, and you know, she says, "This is as far as I'm willing to go mentally with this." But like, I see your point. I see your side, or I hear what you're saying, but and not fully going into it, but able to like coexist with it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's all very weird, like I said, and I think I can see why it maybe was controversial in terms of the portrayal of hippies. And like I said, I would have liked a bit more about like the peace movement and more of a moral stance as opposed to just like, oh, they're so weird, you know, kind of thing at times. Not that that was, you know, it wasn't all the time, and it wasn't overpowering, but that was, I think, the main moment where I was just like, yeah, we needed to explore this a little more, I think. Even though I adored the song, and I think the actress was incredible, particularly for a solo, you know, to just belt that out. But anyway, but hopefully we'll come into a little bit more clearer focus as we move on to the other sections then. Are you guys all happy for us to move on to talk about the acting?
Sure. Yes.
Right. So I have a little bit of information about the acting. I'm going to start us with the first half, and then Toby has a little bit to carry on with, because I've drafted us all, ironically, into doing stuff this episode. So I will begin by telling you that according to Emily Saws at the Turner Classic Movies website, Milos Forman's only casting regret was Nicholas Ray as the general. He said, though he performed well, Ray had to endure clouds of heavy smoke for his big scene, and it was only weeks later that Forman learned he was dying of lung cancer. Ouch. That's not great, especially for a very minor role as well. Mm-hmm. Cheryl Barnes previously had appeared in the Broadway stage productions of Godspell and Jesus Christ Superstar. In the magazine Turnaround, director Milos Forman said of Barnes's audition, as she started to sing the tune she had prepared, a hush came over the room. She had a voice like a bell, flawless musicality and great presence. A maid in a main motel, Barnes had taken the bus into New York for the open call and walked away with the role of Hood's fiance, who I was just talking about. Her first take of the song Easy to Be Hard, thought by many to be the finest version of the song, was reportedly perfect. After shooting Wrapped in Barstow, California, where Hair's bass sequences were filmed, Barnes decided to stay. And though she went through the motions of pursuing a singing career, Hair would ultimately turn out to be her biggest role. And actress Annie Golden was cast as Jeannie after director Forman saw Golden performing with the punk rock band The Shirts at a famous Bowery rock and roll nightclub. I had no idea she was an actual punk singer, so news to me. And yeah, Toby, you have the rest if you don't mind. Take it away for us.
Yeah. Hair was John Savage's second consecutive Vietnam War movie. He had co-starred in The Deer Hunter a year earlier, 1978. And Tweed Williams had to come back to audition dozens of times for the role of Berger. He was a strong contender from his stage work in Greece, but the role of Berger had been owned by Jim Rackney, who wanted to play him in the film as well. Though Milos Forman thought Rackney too old to play the part, the writer-actor wasn't ready to hand it over. According to Forman's memoir, when asked to repeat a song one day during yet another audition, a frustrated Williams lost it, physically launching himself at Rackney, perhaps in an effort to literally wrestle the role away from him. Forman gave him the part then and there.
I love that story. He just got so frustrated and was like, I'll just take it from you then. But yeah, I've got to say that it baffles me, because I think he's incredible, Tweet Williams, in this movie, and I can't imagine that you'd want anybody else in that. And that's the role that carries. I mean, as much as the character does some dodgy things, I think performance-wise, I was genuinely impressed, because I've never seen Tweet Williams do like singing and dancing and stuff. I know him more as a dramatic actor in the couple of things I've actually seen. So I was very impressed with his talent and ability in that main role. Do you guys have a similar experience?
Yes, I was pretty surprised. I'm a little bit reversed, because I had to look him up later, what he'd been in by name. I didn't remember all the things he'd been in. But then when I looked at his IMDb page, and I was like, oh, this guy. And yeah, it was really amazing.
Cool. And what about you, Toby? Did you think Tweet Williams did a good job as Berger in the film?
Oh yeah, I do so too. I mean, I can't judge how it is compared to the other version, the musical version, so I don't really know if moving on to Tweed Williams was a good idea, depending on how the other version is. But as it is, this version, it's very good.
Yeah, absolutely. And Adrienne, I would assume, you know, you obviously have thoughts on this. You are the expert on the film, so.
Right. I just love his transition to the military soldier part, you know, that that's when I really think he his acting chops kick in, is in the very end. Yeah,
and I think I should probably have said it during writing, although I don't know what you would class it as writing, directing or what, but I love the kind of the callback to the initial song and the added kind of deep sadness and tragedy to the line, "I believe in God, God believes in Claude, and that's me." And it's the way he kind of exasperatedly is like, that's me now. Yeah. I'm kind of, oh dear.
And when he says, "I'm a genius, genius," and he's looking in the sky like, "Oh, you're such a genius, Berger. Look what you got yourself into."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and that was very well acted with, you know, I mean, that's through a song, a musical number, and with tons of extras in this huge production, and I still think incredibly well acted.
Mind-blowing, that moment.
I mean, it's not the only thing, if I'm shouting out like things that he's great at. Like I said, the I Got Life performance.
Oh, yeah.
So good during the whole, like, you know, running on the table and whatever.
Yeah, that's when you see his dancing. I'm like, wow. Yeah,
that's what I mean. Awesome. Yeah, it was incredible. Mm-hmm. And but even from like a dramatic actor standpoint, the argument, like I said, that he gets in with Berger when he's like, you know, he just can't, when he gets in with Claude, sorry, when he genuinely can't even believe, like, you're not actually still going to that, are you? You know, this is dumb. So
yeah, he can't imagine it.
Yeah, exactly.
He just can't imagine it.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's, I mean, we've all basically said Treat Williams thoroughly deserving of the award nomination that we know from the BTS that he got. So the next person to talk about would probably be John Savage, who I know from Star Trek Voyager, but, you know, your mileage may vary, I suppose. Yeah. Couldn't have said something cool like the Deer Hunter, could I? No, it had to be Star Trek. But anyway, so what did you think of John Savage's performance as Claude? Sandy, I'm going to ask you first about
Claude. Yeah, he was actually really good because of his believability of being kind of like shy in the beginning or not too sure about this world that he's entering, maybe even being a bit naive and just like all the arcs, you know, that we're talking about, he makes kind of a big one, but still remaining committed to what he came there to do. So yeah, I thought his acting was good, but still not as good as Berger.
No, I mean, it's the secondary role. I kind of see what you're saying. For me, I think John Savage really captured the kind of, the naivety was the word you used, and I think that's kind of how I felt as well. You get the sense that he's going off to war, not because he particularly has any, you know, moral strong belief or whatever, but just because it's what he's expected to do. And that's the role that's kind of been stuck on him from society right away from the start, when he's kind of solemnly getting the bus and his dad's like, "Well, here's some money in case you get in trouble, best go off and join the army now, it's the done thing," or whatever. And even like his very half-assed argument where they actually ask what he's doing it for, and he says, "I'm doing it for you," to Hood, and Hood's response is just like, "Well, if that's the case, let me just, you know, ease your conscience, because if the shoe were on the other foot, I really would not do it for you, so don't give me that crap," you know.
Right.
So yeah, well, it just felt like
he was drafted. You know, he was drafted. He didn't volunteer to go out of a sense of patriotism or something, you know.
No, but I get drafted. The sense that he was kind of, like I said, he wasn't devastated about the draft. It was like, this is what the done thing is.
Yeah.
This is
my he maybe wasn't, not still necessarily honored, brainwashed.
But he's still honored to represent his country. But he was drafted, but he realizes, well, this is my duty. I have to go fight for my country.
Yes, and but it's like what Sandy says. I think there's a degree, of brainwashing there, and a degree of like, you have to go. It is the noble thing. It's the done thing. Fight for your country, and
you're doing that for us.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a couple of musical numbers that kind of, I think, allude to that and sort of point to that as well, where it's kind of, it shows you that it's kind of a circus of kind of propaganda and like, I think specifically during the protest scene that you actually get, that's not super long, but I think it's there for a reason, you know. Maybe that's, again, I don't know if that's that I'm reading too much into it, but I think that given that we didn't deal as much with the whole peace movement thing, I think I appreciated that that was there, and there was kind of like, you can't think anything other than that these hippie guys are very anti-war, or certainly anti the war in Vietnam, you know, which and again, it's historically, it's kind of sad looking back now, because like, I think it's pretty much universally acknowledged that they shouldn't have been there, and it was a huge mistake and whatever else. So looking back now and thinking, man, how many people were kind of brainwashed into thinking, no, I've got to go and do the noble thing and whatever. And it's just like, oh, that's tragic, you know, in a weird kind of way. Not getting too heavily into that because it's very heavy stuff, but it does give you that historical context of like, oof. And again, that adds the extra kind of bit of impact, I think, to the ending with Berger and what happens to him. I should have probably said spoiler alert before now if you haven't seen the film, but you were a little bit beyond that, I suppose. I think, like I said, John Savage was great at portraying that. I do think he was a bit, again, maybe I'm being biased here, but I think he was a bit out of his depth when it came to the singing and dancing kind of stuff. Because I've never seen him do that, but for me, he didn't look as comfortable doing it. But I think he got away with that because that's the character. You know, he's not fully jumping into the hippie lifestyle. He is quite nervous and a little bit unsure. So for me, I think that worked. What about you, Toby? How did you feel about John Savage playing Claude?
Yeah, in general, I agree with all that has been said. And I didn't notice that as much. That you felt uncomfortable. I have to rewatch this to see. That it was a little bit sloppy. That for sure. I didn't notice the angle of uncomfortableness. But
that could just be me being biased, I guess, or being really harsh to the actor. But yeah. So I've already said I think Cheryl Barnes was outstanding in the solo song. I think everyone else, you know, without wanting to get individually into every little role, I think everyone does their job really well. With what they're given. Like I said, I've already explained my issues with Hood, but that's not the actor's fault. That's a writing thing. Adrienne, did you have anything else you wanted to say about any of the actors in the movie? Because again, you know them well enough. So.
No, I'm just enjoying listening to you guys talk about this movie. You know, like I said, I've seen it so many times. I have it memorized, like every word memorized. I could do the whole play on stage of the movie.
That's fair enough. Do you have a particular acting performance that stands out for you as maybe being the best? Or because we haven't actually mentioned either Beverly D'Angelo, who I remember you saying was really good and shocked me, because like I said, I couldn't recognize who she was at first, and then when I did, I was like, the chick from the Vacation movies.
Oh my gosh,
that's literally the only place I know her from, I think. Unless that's I've awesome. Seen something and not been aware of it, but yeah. Anyway, but she was really, really, really good as this.
Yeah,
kind of,
she
like,
was.
Like
she
Sandy
was
said, this she's going through her own journey of like, do I want to be this buttoned up stuffy?
Right. Am I going to be the debutante? Yeah. Am I going? Yeah. And thank God we had that comedy with the Steve, her fiance, her betrothed. And the car thing that was actually. To
me, I thought was that was a brother. I am so dense sometimes.
Oh, maybe it is her. I don't know. Maybe so.
Because there was, I didn't see that as a
betrothal. You know what? He might be. Maybe I don't have it memorized as much as I thought. Maybe, I always thought that was supposed to be her soon to be. But no, there is a part. Oh, no, I don't know. I'm lost now. But anyway.
I honestly wouldn't feel confident saying one way or the other, but I think I picked up that it was supposed to be.
Okay.
I think it was supposed to be her brother. If not, then. They are as a couple, they're entirely not touching, completely sexless, and we'll see, I suppose. We'll look it up later.
I just love
the whole point was that, you know, he represents the life of,
he represents,
you know,
that
she wants to leave behind
were,
and the stuffy servitude and whatever, and Berger and Claude represent freedom to her, I suppose, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Sorry, I stepped on what you were saying.
I mean, if we're talking about the women, I loved Annie Golden as Jeannie. Like, she just was the heart of the movie. You know, she cared so much about everybody, and I love that.
I wish she'd had a bit more to do. The film had given her a bit more, because I didn't think... I mean, she's in it all the way through at the end, and like you said, there's so many things that, like, she seems really crestfallen when she sees the skinny dipping happening and sees that Claude is in love with... And I can never remember the name, Beverly D'Angelo.
Sheila,
it is. When she sees that Claude is just madly in love with Sheila, and she's already, we've seen her like propose to him more or less and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a real sadness there. And I kind of was like, I would have appreciated like a little bit of an exploration of that, even if it was just a solo song from her about like unrequited love or something.
Right.
Hang on a second.
Oh Okay, for those of you, if he leaves this in the show, we all just got a Discord of Steve from Stranger Things with big hair. Because Andy was looking it up to see if Steve was Sheila's brother, and boy, oh, anyway.
So you made the mistake of googling hair and Steve. Oh no, it actually specifically says Miles Chapin as Steve, comma Sheila's brother.
Yeah,
okay.
I just saw it too. Yeah.
Me too, Adrian. I was there with you.
There we go. Well, like I said, I wasn't sure, but I got the it's not really relevant in terms of, you know, what it represented right. Anyway. So.
I don't feel as bad for him now. I don't feel near as bad for him.
I
think I knew that at one point, but forgot it.
I didn't feel bad for him, but I did feel like Berger was being a bit of a jerk when he's like literally stealing his car and stuff. And I'm just
Berger's on a mission. He's going to try to get these two people together. Yeah. And this guy, Steve, is in the way.
I also just really hated him, like, hitting on Sheila and, like, touching up her leg and stuff. And I was like, not only is that incredibly, like, you know, predatory of you, but that's your best friend's girl, for us we know, you know what I mean? Anyway, again, there's a couple of things in here that I think aren't the best or have dated poorly, or maybe I just don't live the hippie life where free love for all. I guess we'll say that. So, fair enough. I kind of put words in your mouth. Did you have a performance you wanted to mention that was your favorite, Adrian?
I have. I mentioned that Berger's arc, I think, especially how Treat Williams is in the last, I'm going to just say, like, the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Completely. Yeah. Fair enough. So is everyone cool if we move to the directing then?
Yeah.
Which couldn't take very long. I only have one thing to add here, which is that a March 1979 Life magazine article said of the film's Czech director, Miloš Forman, he comes from the land of Kafka and he could understand youth in rebellion. Since his own country has a tradition of subtle resistance to authority, they've been dominated so often, so long. Which I never really gave a thought to until reading that and then was like, oh, I guess, yeah, he could be coming from a place of like resistance to authority, I suppose, in that way. Or
Czechoslovakia went through it.
Yeah, and completely got a different name. It's the Czech Republic.
I mean, exactly. They really went through it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So did anything stand out? I've only got a couple of things. Anything stand out about the direction for you, Adrian? I'm going to come to you first, because why?
I think just the pacing. I love the fast pace of the movie, how fast it goes, how fast real life goes, how fast it could just be, you turn around and everything has changed and it's different. I love that.
Cool.
Yeah.
But the direction, I think, is very much making a stance, more or less. Yeah. It, you know, so, but again, that might be because of, if you want to sort of see it that way, because of Miloš Forman's background, you know. But no, I'm with you. I think it's very much making a particular stance. It's just, I wish it were sometimes a bit more blatant and a bit more. But then again, it's an entertainment kind of musical song and dance thing. So I guess you have to kind of ride that balance, I suppose. Anyway,
it's more opposition in spirit than really in the writing itself. I mean, like, it's there, but it's more like about the spirit of the characters that are oppositioning to society and less about the direct opposition to politics. Although all these things obviously are intertwined in some way.
No, I think that's exactly what you're saying, is that you get the sense of a rebellious nature in the direction, the way things are framed and filmed and the quick shots, and just the overall spirit of the piece feels, like you said, defiant, I think, at times as well. So, yeah. Okay. Sandy, how about you? Did something stand out in the direction that you wanted to mention?
Nothing really standing out. As far as using the word subtle, I would say only that it subtly pulled me in. Like, when I sat down to watch it and put it on, I didn't expect, like, I made no notes because I was fully into the movie before I even realized I was. So
I love that. I just love hearing that.
Yeah, I have two things written down, but nothing to do with direction. I don't know. It just made me laugh so hard when he said something like, I've never ridden a horse before. Is it difficult?
Yeah.
That's what I mean, though. Yeah, some of that kind of that humor, which is, it gives you such good levity. I've got the same thing I've written it under direction, but again, I completely forgot about it until now. I love the humor of the scene where Berger is forced to kind of go home tail between his legs to ask his parents for money to bail them out of jail. And he's having this big argument like to his dad about like his lifestyle or whatever. And his mom's just there like, give me your pants. Come on. And he's like, my pants are fine, Ma. Would you just shut up? I absolutely think that is one of my highlights of the film because it is just so funny, the sort of innocuous, you know, argument with his mum as he gets more and more frustrated while he's having the serious argument with his dad. And I just, right. I laughed out loud at like, the pants are fine, Mom.
Right. The whole get a job right now thing. You're dirty. Let me help you be clean. It's what parents would do to their son. And then in the end, you know, she sneaks into the kitchen and he's there and she says, how much do you need? You know, I just love that Burger's mom in that scene. Yeah.
Oh, I loved her more in the whole, like, get your pants off. I'll just clean your pants. No!
Oh, he wanted to get his friends out of jail.
I was even surprised he had a home. I really thought they were all homeless.
Well, I mean, they would probably regard themselves as such, because, like I said, I think it was, for me, I got the sense it wasn't a great thing for him having to kind of go back home. And I think they did say at one point, I haven't seen him for ages, and you know, if he wants money, just go and get a job and clean yourself up. And like Adrian said, all of that stuff, get a haircut and whatever else. Mm. Which again, ironic, because that's exactly what he does just to impersonate the soldier at the end of the film. Doesn't turn out well for him. So,
But it's the whole counterculture, you know, the sexual revolution and everything. I mean, Sandy and I know why this movie is so relevant today as it was back then.
Yeah. See, I wasn't born till 82.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so different. That's why I was interested in your all's opinion.
I do think it was a very poignant moment that I had to make a note of, that when they're going through the, you know, everybody getting on the plane to go to Vietnam, Forman very pointedly sort of lingers on a scene of a very young looking boy. And I think that's quite deliberate as well. It's like,
yeah, very young. And they're walking like into the mouth of death.
Yeah,
that's how, like, the darkness of the airplane, and you know, they're just going off for no reason.
Yeah. And I think that's as much as I really need to say about, unless you guys have anything else on the direction or the production design, so much as it is, because I don't have anything for that except Toyla Tharp, great job.
Yeah, her dancing is incredible. The dancing choreography I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
Very unique stuff, especially from the very beginning with the horses and everything.
Yeah, the horse stuff was great.
Oh, yeah. I loved it all. Like I said, the trip sequence, the Central Park dancing.
Yeah.
The hair number, the Burger's thing on the table. You know, I got like.
That's funny.
So, yeah. And when it comes to music and sound, I didn't really have much else that I could say other than I wanted to kind of, to fill this section a bit, I just wanted to go around and ask what everybody's favorite song was, because we know there's like 22 of them. So what was everyone's favorite song in the movie? Starting with you, Adrienne, since you know it the best.
Right. Well, I just love How Can People Be So Heartless? Like, I just think that is the most amazing song. It's really hard for me to even watch it and listen to it. I have to fast forward through it if I'm not in the right mood, because her singing is so incredible in the lyrics. But I love that. I guess the best song for me out of humor is the scene in the jail when they're talking about hair. That's really, you know, I know all the lyrics to that song. I used to sing it all the time as a kid just to be silly. But I guess the final Let the Sunshine In is really the clincher for me.
That song's now ruined for me forever, because that's I expected something quite happy and cheerful to accompany that song, which I knew, and then exactly the opposite happened. I'm like, well, that's ruined forever now.
Exactly. I had the soundtrack as a little kid, and when I finally saw the movie, I broke down on my hands and knees sobbing, because he died and he went for his friend, and this, oh my god, this movie was really about love and caring and everything. And
absolutely, yeah. So, Toby, did you have a favorite song or performance, anything that you wanted to mention? I'll be honest, I don't know the names of every one of the songs. I've just written down random stuff sometimes to make it make sense to me. But how about you anyway?
Yeah, I just looked through Wikipedia and the list, so I'm hoping I mix and match correctly. The intro song, Aquarius, I think, is the name.
Very
that
famous.
I really love.
Yes, very famous song.
I love stuff like that, like soul. I'm not really a rock person, especially not like Oda walk. So so that part is a little bit of no, not for me. But Aquarius, love.
Oh,
and
wow.
And what I thought was really funny, and in that moment I thought this is Adrian's favorite movie. This one right here was when they just list sexual stuff. And I was like,
I was shocked by that at the start. Absolutely.
I was a little kid. I had no idea what those words even were. And I just always skipped that song on the record because I was like,
I was so shocked by that. That was
yeah.
So shock value.
Yep. Yeah. I would literally lift up the pin, the needle off the record and skip that song and go on to the next one.
It's just like, so weird though, because there's not even
like
mom
normally said it's about sex stuff. It's not grown up stuff, Adrian. You'll understand that stuff later. I'm like, okay, so I just skipped it.
I find it so weird though, because there's not even like a framework or a song or like a function to the song. It is just literally a question of really potentially offensive words and then singing them out. I'm not going to do it, but singing out like the weirdest possible hyper sexual offensive swear words, and I'm just like, whoa. And this is like the second song in the film. Yeah. As well. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, easy.
Yeah, it's supposed to be about, you know,
oh, it's about to shock you, obviously.
But you know, these things are out there. Don't, you know, you're adult, you're free, don't it's free love time, you know, exploration of your sexuality or whatever. But it's still not my favorite part.
Yeah.
I'm more of like a let's ride in the car together and wake up to the sun and sing these songs about sunshine. That's more my style.
Which was my favorite song.
Oh, of course.
Starshine, was it?
Yeah, it's the Starshine one, because it was Starshine instead of Sunshine, which nobody appreciates. But because of where they were during the film, they were, you know, just no cares in the world, going down the highway in the convertible under the sun and just having the time of their lives in that moment.
Anyway. And they're all there. You know, nobody's left out.
They're just going to see their friend. Yeah, he wasn't.
His son and wife are there.
Yeah.
And they're all trying to kind of get acquainted with her and the whole situation with him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty much the only one as well that has that kind of cosmic vibe, because it is very basically just like, hello, the stars, the earth says hello. And it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah. It's a famous song. You know, it was.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
All over the world during that time. It's happy. It's a thing that makes you happy to sing it right now. Good morning, Starshine.
Yeah. Cool. I had a couple things I wanted to shout out, because I think my favorite was probably Aquarius as well, but I also did like both times that they use. I think is it called Manchester, England, the song? Yeah, so both times they use that I thought was really good. And I also liked John Savage singing Where Do I Go? Because like I said, as much as he seemed nervous and a bit out of his depth sometimes, when he gets that solo song to do, and it really does emphasize Claude's journey of like, I'm just going along with this, but really why? And what am I doing? And what's my next path in life? I was like, wow, that's very
relatable.
Yeah,
that's a really heavy. Yeah. And
I don't mind a bit heavy every now and then.
Easy to Be Hard is the name of the Cheryl Barnes song. Yeah, that's the one I love. And it makes you cry if you really watch it a lot. The more if you ever watch this movie again, you guys will know what I mean.
Oh, see what you mean? I mean, that was too heavy for me. That's the problem. I think I can acknowledge that it was a fantastic performance. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I thought it was also really well directed, because it stripped all the bells and whistles and it was just basically, we're locked on this woman's face. This is all we need.
Yeah, her standing there. Oh my gosh, I know. Oh, so heavy.
Yeah. But like I said, it's too sad for me.
For
probably the best performance, but I couldn't really say it was my favorite thing, because it was just like, this is just really achingly sad.
People left their families to you know, people still do leave their families. There's a lot of abandonment out there. And I guess, fact that they come together in the end, that's what's important, because, you know, a lot of times families never reconcile.
That's true, I suppose. Yeah. Okay, cool. If that's it, then I don't really have much else to add about the film, and I'm aware of time marching ever forward as it tends to do. Do you guys have anything you wanted to quickly shout out before I move to the critics' response to this?
Nope.
Cool. As I said, with this being a cinema classics, I never really do audience response. I always do critics' response, because it's always assumed if it's a cinema classic, it's going to have at least mostly positive reception. And because I'm just fascinated to see, you know, how they get this reputation as a classic, or how the reception has aged over the years, or various things like that. So I'm going to start the critic's response, and then Sandy's going to pick up the baton and finish it off, if she has the second half of it there.
I'm ready.
Cool. So I'll start by saying, although critics and audience members were skeptical that this relic of the late 60s would translate to the screen effectively in 1979, once it opened, Milos Forman's stunning, expansive adaptation of the musical won over most of the naysayers. Now it's considered one of the best modern musicals in film. Famed film critic Roger Ebert gave this movie 4 stars and a glowing review, saying, Milos Forman's hair opens with such confidence and joy, moves so swiftly and sustains itself so well that I wonder why I had any doubts. Hair is amazingly not a period piece, but a freshly conceived and staged memory of the tribulations of the mid-60s. Ebert goes on to say he was totally blown away by the opening number, Age of Aquarius. I walked into Hair with the gravest doubts that this artifact of 60s social shock, by saying that 10 times, would transfer to our current sleepier times. In the 60s, we went to angry musicals. Now we line up for La Cage aux Folles. My doubts disappeared with the surge and bold authority of the first musical statement. This is the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. Ebert goes on to say how blown away he was by the choreography in this number, using dancing horses and hippies alike, dancing in unison. I said I lost my doubts about Hair during Age of Aquarius. To be more precise, they disappeared during Twyla Tharp's opening scene in Central Park, when the dancers were joined by the horses of mounted policemen. Anyone who can sit through that opening dance sequence and not be thrilled should give up musicals. Ebert goes on to say it's one of the best musical books ever written. It is also a terrific musical. The songs, of course, were good to begin with. The glory of Hair and Let the Sunshine In and Age of Aquarius, and the sly, silly warmth of Black Boys, White Boys. But to the original music, the film version adds a story that works well with it. Airy and open photography and glorious choreography by Twyla Tharp. Ebert finishes his review by saying Milos Forman resurrects the musical with Hair and opens the door for new modern and adult musicals to come. He brings life to the musical form in the same way that West Side Story did in 1961, the last time everyone was saying the movie musical was dead. Hair received generally favorable reviews from critics at the time of release. It currently holds an 82% fresh rating on the reviews website Rotten Tomatoes from 60 critics. The critical consensus reads, spiritedly performed by a groovy cast and imaginatively directed by Milos Forman, Hair transports audiences straight to the Age of Aquarius. At the 37th Golden Globe Awards, Hair was nominated for a Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy Award, and Williams was nominated for New Star of the Year in a Motion Picture Male. The film was also nominated for Best Foreign Film at the 1980 César Awards. Sandy, over to you to finish us off there.
For the New York Times, Vincent Canby called it a rollicking musical memoir. Michael Weller's inventions make this Hair seem much funnier than I remember the shows having been. They also provide time and space for the development of characters who, on the stage, had to express themselves almost entirely in song. The entire cast is superb. Mostly, the film is a delight, Frank Rich said. If ever a project looked doomed, it was this one, referring to the largely plotless and dated musical upon which it was based, Forman's and Tharp's lack of movie musical experience, the largely unproven cast, and the film's grand budget. But that, in spite of these obstacles, Hair succeeds at all levels as low-down fun, as affecting drama, as exhilarating spectacle, and as provocative social observation. It achieves its goals by rigorously obeying the rules of classic American musical comedy. Dialogue, plot, song, and dance blend seamlessly to create a juggernaut of excitement. Through every cut and camera angle in Hair, every cut and camera angle in Hair appears to have been carefully conceived, the total effect is spontaneous. Like the best movie musicals of the 50s, Singing in the Rain, and the 60s, A Hard Day's Night, Hair leaps from one number to the next. Soon, the audience is leaping too. Gene Siskel and Robert Ebert both placed Hair on the list of top films of 1979. Siskel named it as the best film of the year, number one on his list. Explaining the film's poor commercial performance at the time, director Milos Forman said it was too soon for nostalgia and too late to be actuality. The film has gained many accolades since its release, though. It was rated number 33 among the American Film Institute's 2004 list of the top 100 America's greatest music in the movies for The Song of Aquarius. The New York Times placed the film on its best 1,000 movies ever list. It's included among the American Film Institute's 2006 list of 180 movies nominated for AFI's Great movie musicals.
Awesome. Thank you. And I am going to do something a little unorthodox, because I'll be honest, I did actually post the thing asking for audience feedback on this film by complete accident. And I did get two before I kind of took it hastily down and remembered we don't do that for this. So because these people contributed, I may as well jump in with a couple of very small bits of feedback. So first of all, from Cult Cinema and TV, Al Winter just says, some great tunes, but what a depressing ending. And from Cinema Royale, these are Facebook groups, by the way, David Myers says he gives it 4.5 out of 5 and says, one of the few movies that makes me cry. So, yeah. So then, we kind of have to just finish up here with the ways that we usually do, beginning with me going around and asking everyone for their favorite character, moment, and line in the movie. I'll tell you what, I'll go counterclockwise. Sandy, who's your favorite character in the movie and why?
Beverly D'Angelo's character is my favorite, and
Sheila.
Just because of her seeing these choices and making kind of the choice to do what she wants. I just thought she was just also very cute in her musical numbers and things, and kind of see now you know, where she got her start. I never knew it. Like you, the first thing I saw her in was European Vacation, and she does the whole dance number in the shower. And I felt like she was given that because she had some history with doing musical. And I never knew what that beginning was. And it was kind of neat to see that. But also, I just adored her. So she was my favorite in the film.
Awesome. Fair enough. Toby, what about you? Who was your favorite character and why?
I want to shout out two for one reason. And I think the best character in the sense of who I liked the most was Sheila for all the points already mentioned. But the best performance was for the character of Burger. And I do want to shout that out, that it was an incredible performance. And
I see what you mean. Absolutely, couldn't agree more. And Adrienne, what about you? Favorite character and why?
Just Burger and his arc, just especially the last part, so great.
Cool. I kind of struggled because I thought everyone has kind of some kind of dodgy moment that I don't particularly love, however small it is. So the favorite character I went with was Claude, because I think it's it's relatable, and he, although he is a kind of a rube and he goes along with all this thing, I think the idea that he gets his eyes opened and he gets the bigger arc, I think, appealed to me most. Although now I kind of wish I had concentrated a little bit more on Sheila, and will do next time I watch this, because as you're saying these things, I'm like, actually, I don't know why I didn't really register that. Was it some innate sexism, or was it just, it's not like a main character? I don't know, but
fun to all watch this together.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie is very busy, so
yeah.
I can't blame anyone for missing certain things.
Yeah. Right.
For sure. It just didn't seem like the film was telling her story, but now that I hear like Sandy's particular opinion on it, I think it was, and I just wasn't really registering it. Anyway, so what is your favorite moment or scene, Sandy, in the film?
I did have this picked out. I guess still just going back to the Hare Krishna musical number after the LSD was dropped in the park. Just because it did, that's when the first time I really saw metaphor in the film, and I usually miss these things. And again, you know, based on what the writers or creators themselves had said, it may have just spoken to me or me and Adrian, but that was really my favorite part, just because it was a turning point in the film. Like, his eyes had been opened, her eyes had been opened, you know, just kind of to these other choices that they had or didn't have, couldn't make. And it just seems like it was the center of the film, and everything that happened before, and everything that happened before happened after. But for me, that was just like the funnest part. And I just loved the musical number, and I loved the music, and I liked the kind of Hindu visuals there also. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my favorite part. I just thought it was really fun.
I haven't got that as mine, but once again, I kind of wish I had. So I should have waited and then just copied off you, clearly. I sort of wish I had said that, because I can see where you're coming from, definitely. So you're obviously being very convincing. But no, I think we all bring our own experiences to these things. I don't think it's unusual that myself and Toby's experience would be different than yours and Adrienne's, and why. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Because a lot of times we do copy each other, yeah.
Yeah, what score did you give it? I'll just quickly. No, I won't do that. So, Toby, what was your favorite moment or scene and why?
I mean, the intro sequence is really fun and well done, very choreographed, good music. That's a really fun scene. And then to contrast that, the scene with the fiance that was abandoned, that was, oh my God. Mm-hmm. That was heavy. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
And, okay. And I like them both. The beginning for the fun and this one for not fun.
That's fine. We'll let you cheat and pick two. That's fine. It's a big movie, 2 hours, lots of stuff happens. What about you, Adrienne? What was your favorite moment or scene?
Yeah, Easy to Be Hard is that scene where she's singing is incredible. But I guess if I had to pick not my favorite, but the most emotional and poignant scene is when they're singing over the grave at the end and they're all singing as loud as they can with their full hearts. And we see the name on the grave. Like I just, yeah,
okay.
I still lose it like I did when I was a preteen.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was kind of surprised that the ending didn't hit, you know, it wasn't a 4 out of 4, because I think that was kind of what I had to go with. I think it's very effective and it really works. If you want me to pick a specific moment, it's what I've already mentioned. It's the kind of moment of horrible realization from Berger when he's singing, you know, and Claude, that's me. Mm-hmm. As I said, that was when I just fully went. I was like, as I said, I was kind of ahead of the film before that. I was like, oh, I see what's happening. I see what's going on, blah, blah. And so I was expecting it. But that was the moment that was just like, oh, crap. You know, the penny dropped and the emotion really overwhelmed for that moment.
It does, so. Yeah. And John Savage opening the empty barracks.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So do you have a favorite line, Sandy, that you can quote back at us now from the film?
Favorite line.
And please don't just sing the really, offensive song from the first, first few minutes.
I think just the first, I mean, I only able to write down one. I've never ridden a horse before. Is it difficult? And it just made me laugh.
Cool.
So that's hard. Fine. That I did sense. Like it. It just stood out.
That's great. Toby, what about you? Do you have anything you can particularly remember or mention?
I don't have a favorite line, but I think what the moment that made me go crazy was I'm not going to say it, but you know.
Yeah, that's the whole song, basically.
This is so stupid.
That's true enough. Then I won't ask you to recite that back. Adrienne, no, you must have a favorite line that you can recite to us here.
I won't say favorite, but you know, this song, this music touches me. So it's not from a lyric from a song, but when Hud walks over and says, I ain't no Lafayette, I think it makes you really realize how it was sort of they changed their persona from who they had to be growing up. And I think that's the one I'm going to stick with.
Okay. That would not have been my choice.
Yes, it's a hard moment, but that's just so, it's such a huge part of the film and everything.
Yeah, okay. Now, mine, I think, is because it's really well acted and it's a powerful line anyway, but when you add the resonance of the end of the film to it, the line I went with is from Berger, and it is, I am ridiculous. I'm totally ridiculous. I'm ludicrous. I don't want to go over there and murder women and shoot babies, which, like I said, when you consider the ending is kind of like, oh, shit. right. So with that, you know, you can, yeah, go for it. What?
I also want to shout out that the lyrics to Black Boys and White Boys are so funny.
Borderline offensive. But
yeah. I wasn't sure. Yeah, borderline offensive. Bring it up. Yeah. But for the time.
You know, I was surprised at who all joined in to sing with them.
Yeah. That part. That part.
Yeah, I was kind of sort of tiptoeing around things like that, perhaps. Yeah. But, yeah, certainly some things, if they remade the film today, would probably not make the cut.
I love Nell Carter. She was so great.
Right, so all that remains then is for us to give our conclusion and our score out of 5 stars, as we always do. Let's see, who should we go with first? I'm going to go counterclockwise again, and I'm going to ask you first, Sandy, what was your opinion on this?
I would give it 4 out of 5 stars.
Oh, okay. Any further elaboration as to why, or just...
Oh, that it was just really fun. I'm happy to hear, despite the fact that I completely missed the movie, I'm happy to hear that it has its place in cinematic history. I think it's well deserved, just because of, I've said this before, but when you watch a movie and it leaves you with a feeling, it creates a feeling in you and leaves you with it, and you're sitting with it all day, that means something to me. And this one did. And I just, while I didn't fully let the parts that were more heavy sink in, instead I chose to kind of hang on to all the happy and joyous moments and the funny parts. And that's what I was left with. And so that's where most of my enjoyment comes from.
Okay. Makes sense. I think I can't really argue with that. I think that it's a movie that does it all. So if that's what appeals, great. And 4 out of 5, very good score. Toby, do you have a conclusion and a score out of 5 for us?
This movie is the most out of left field thing I've watched since whoever it was that made me watch Dolomite. Who was that?
It wasn't me.
This was even more crazy. I think it's not really a problem of the movie. It's just that it's so out there that when you watch it for the first time, you're just trying to deal with everything, that you just miss a lot of deeper stuff. And I feel like you have to watch this movie a second time so that you already expect the weird stuff, so that you can focus on the stuff behind that, because the first time you're watching, you're just inhaling this weird stuff and going like, I'm vibing.
Yeah, okay. There's nothing wrong with vibing. Cool.
So I feel it's a little bit hard to give it a score after one watch, and I didn't have time to watch it a second time. I might do sometime. I don't know. Who knows? probably with a friend, because I think that's more funny to do that. So for now, I give it... out of 5, I always have to convert my 3.5 is like the equivalent of 7. Yeah,
absolutely fine. I'm gonna go next because I want to finish on Adrienne, because I get the feeling, you know, it was her choice and it's only fair, and it'd probably be the most I would assume positive, hopefully. Be very shocked if we go to her and she's like, I made you all watch this thing I hate. What's up?
Never. Maybe I'll do that next time. That'd be funny. No. I got you.
Yeah, watching to whom?
Yeah. All of us trying to be polite.
Let's all watch my favorite movie, Birdemic. No.
Oh, God. I don't know what that is.
You don't want to know. No, but here's my my conclusion and my score out of 5. I said a very well-directed movie with outstanding choreography, singing, acting performances, and a very impactful ending. If I'm being critical, and that's kind of my job here, it feels to me like the writers tried to force in too many musical numbers and neglected the idea of having a narrative or more filmic elements. The first half in particular moves at a rapid pace, but goes from song to song and doesn't stop to give us time to get to know the characters and have more intimate interactions. There's also a few dated and pretty dodgy elements, particularly around the portrayal and treatment of women and people of color. And I don't love the glorifying of hard drugs. I also think it's really hard to like the hippie group and could have done with them being softened and a bit less abrasive at times. But criticisms aside, it comes together really well. I appreciated a lot of the striking imagery, the talent on display. A lot of the songs were catchy or have permeated pop culture. And oh boy, this made my stomach sink at the end, and is one that I definitely need to give another watch, which I had already written, by the way, before we all said exactly that. I definitely want to give another watch, I think. And yeah, I think the quality overtakes the criticisms a lot with my overall feelings, and I ended up giving it a 4 out of 5 as well. So yeah, see? Over to you, Adrienne.
I give it a 4.5. Woo! Ooh. Pretty good.
Reasons why? Did you want to get into like a...
I know it's really dated and that's fine. It's just out of, you know, me, but it's more for me as just a comfort movie, something that I'll put on and walk around and listen to it. And it was one of those movies that I had when I was on the island of Crete. Someday I'll tell you guys the whole story, happened with my stereo and everything and how I only had a TV for a year.
Oh, wow. Yet. Okay.
So VHS's, because it was 1993. So, It was just a go-to for comfort. And I think that's why I give it such a high score, because it just makes me feel good.
You say such a high score. You're only 0.5 above me and Sandy and only 1 point above Toby. So we all
I have movies that are a 5. So this wasn't a 5. Yeah. And one time I said, I give it a 4.8. And you're like, oh, you're giving me fractions again or something like that. So
I don't mind. Sandy does that usually all the time. Anyway, I'm surprised she gave it a rounded number.
He's got a calculator. He's fine.
Okay, then let's give it a 4.8.
Do you want to change it to a 4.8?
Yes, of course I want to change it to a 4.8. I was trying to make everything easy. See, I told you, just leave it at 4.5. That's fine with
no,
me.
No, I'm joking. So hang on.
I love it.
I mean, the 4.8 rather than 4.5 literally doesn't change anything. Okay. When I round it up, it kind of still ends up at the same score. So, yeah, I'm going to just add those together, divide by 4. Officially, the score there would be 4.075, but we'll just round it and say... 4 out of 5, yay! I think. So, yeah, fantastic. Oof. That's a very good score.
I'm glad really it didn't end up with a 3 at the beginning, or I was going to, I don't know. I'm going to be sad.
No, we all went quite high with it. I mean, good. That still wouldn't have been bad, 3 for whatever, but yeah, cool. And so, therefore, all that's left is for me to thank you for tuning in to this groovy deep dive into Hair. It's been an absolute blast genuinely chatting about it with my wonderful friends and guests. Toby, it's always a pleasure to have your insight. Where can folks connect with you online?
More than ever on Blue Sky.
Blue Sky only?
I don't know my handle right now. Give me a second.
I believe it's Dark Sonic?
Dark Sonic, just that.
Yeah. Dark Sonic on Blue Sky. I'll put this all in the descriptions anyway. Yeah. And Sandy, thanks for agreeing to come and join us here last minute. We're always pleased to have you with us. Is there anywhere people can find you online, or just being DK, a bit of a hermit?
Yes, I love being a bit of a hermit, just on your Discord.
Or on our episodes, people can always hear you and experience you that way, which is always good. So, and yeah, Adrienne, thanks for the movie pick and the 60s vibes. And where can the listeners find you, if anywhere online?
I'm not online right now, so I guess here.
Yeah, okay. Again, just keep listening to the podcast then for all of us and all of our various thoughts and opinions. Of course, you can find me, Michael Wilson, and you can follow Silver Screen, Cinema Classics, and indeed all things Silver Screen Podcast on the links that will be appearing on screen if you're watching on YouTube, links that no longer include a link to Twitter for reasons I'm not getting into, but you'll have seen if you follow our socials. You can also go via the link tree that you can always find in our episode descriptions. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and give us a shout if you want us to tackle any of your favorite cinema classics in the future. Remember, folks, there's nothing wrong with a good song and dance, but always watch where you're standing. You never know what you'll step in, especially in Central Park. Yeah, we will be back, don't worry. This was episode 99 of the Silver Screen Podcast. And for episode 100, something very special is coming up very soon. Keep an eye out. And just remember that, you know, traveling through hyperspace is not like dusting crops. Until next time, peace, love, and classic cinema. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to the Silver Screen Podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson, produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the Linktree page listed in the episode's description. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcast Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Silver Screen Podcast or Mike's Podcasts. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share far and wide. Thank you for joining us. Come back next time for more movie magic, and hopefully this can be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.